Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Welcome to Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingham, and as always, it's good to have you in the house. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right here, right now, at www.basnnewsroom.wordpress.com or www.blackathletemedia.com. Yeah, excuse me. I've been trying to eat quickly before I started. My wife is an excellent cook, and the stir fry is kicking my ass. It's because I'm trying too quickly to eat it instead of just enjoying it. Anyway, welcome to the show. And if you were here with us last week, you remember we spoke in praise of Dawn Staley, who is the best coach in college basketball, male or female, right now. She capped it off with going undefeated throughout the season for South Carolina and winning the national championship. She has an impeccable record, and we spent time talking about that record, how it stands up to others, and how her sheer excellence merits being stood out in the midst of others who have tried to do what Dawn has already done. However, you already know good news in the black community usually means bad news everywhere else. And always there's somebody to try to piss on or denigrate what's been done. And it's these very things that we intend to address tonight. Because it's not just the going away of things. I got my brother Reggie with me right now. Reggie, what do you say?
Hey, first of all, congratulations to all the beautiful black queens in the WNBA that were drafted. Look like a beauty pageant. Sisters is looking awesome, man. We give honor and praise to the young ladies and they changed their life. And for all the crap that Angel Reese had to deal with at LSU, her side-ass coach come running up there mokey like she want to be part of the draft. And it made me sick to see it. I mean, she ran up on stage, hugged her, and then put her to the corner. This is the same woman that tried to sabotage her career in her senior year by kicking off the team and wouldn't tell people what was going on. And then at the last minute when it got too hot, then she decided to go ahead and dress dirty prom queen.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. I have no respect for Moki, especially as she did the sister Brittany Grimes when she was being held as a political prisoner in Russia.
When she was at her
college career, she was telling her, look, you don't need to be pushing around that gay issue. You need to sit back and calm down. The only thing she did was give her a national championship when she was there. So, like I said,
I have no respect
for that coach.
Tony's with me as well. Tony, good evening. And we had the WNBA draft, and as Reggie said, a lot of sisters moved on. They got recognized, and they got paid. Even though $80,000 doesn't sound like much to some folks, that's pretty good to others. What was your assessment of everything that was done so far?
D-Mac. To me, Chicago won the draft because they was able to get Cardoza and Angel Reese. So they're definitely going to be a team to deal with. As a matter of fact, you know, I'll go on record saying, Mike, I'm gonna do a trading places bet with you that Angel winds up being the NBA Rookie of the Year this year.
Is it gonna be for the usual amount there, T?
yeah, a whole dollar. You sure you don't want to put extra 50 cents on it? Nah, that's all the budget will allow for this time.
I love it. No question about it. I got Guy with me as well. And Guy, what do you think is the biggest after effect from Dawn finally getting a little bit of love in the midst of all this crap?
Well, what we gotta do is make this more public. Let's keep Brussy out there so people, see what's happening. They're gonna ignore this thing as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
We have to keep pushing the agenda until somebody answers the question.
Yep.
Know your history.
Well, knowing our history also means checking people. And just as the facts clear up all the BS, it's important that people speak up. And I made the point last week that we have to defend the Dawn Stanleys and the Angel Reese's.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
When they get hit with some flack, and not just flack like I disagree, but flack like unreasonable shit, like the kind of crap that came in the L.A. Times. Another, I forget the writer's name, is the botch or bitch or blitch, whatever the fuck it is. But he made a point of trying to denigrate the sisters, and his only extra guy was that he told my black people. This had nothing to do with LSU playing in the free of ball or anything like that. You know, you mad. Why are you mad, bro? You mad because you lost? No, stop. You mad because you were developing something that nobody bothered to buy. And then you gave a half-assed apology after the fact.
No, you gave a half-assed apology after you got caught.
Yeah,
well, that's just it.
It was more so. He wasn't. But again, as what usually happens, he wasn't apologizing for what he wrote. He was apologizing for being called out.
That's right.
This is the kind of shit we had to stay on top of. I can remember when Colin Kaepernick had just started to blossom. He realized what a talent he was. And some asshole in the Sport News wrote about the fact that he has these tattoos and he looked like some bato going into prison and shit. Never mind that all his tattoos were Bible verses, and that was the story. But
don't let the facts get away the argument.
Exactly. But instead of talking about that, they were bringing up the tattoos and trying to make it sound like he was some sort of convict in training. And the person who wrote this is an asshole. I forget his name, but understand Sporting News, cocksucker. He tried to get away because, well, I have black kids. Fuck you. This wasn't because you have black kids and you thought you could say whatever you could. You thought you could get away with saying what you could. And that's why I get annoyed at this nonsense. I just too through at all this shit. You know, everybody's going to come at you hard, and it's about checking hard and keeping everybody quiet. We all know from a standpoint of play, winning makes you quiet. Winning shuts everybody up. There's a reason why some athletes put the finger to their lips and go, shh. When the score shows up at the end, because the point has been made. You did all you could. You didn't get what you want. The result wasn't what you liked. So, two tears in a bucket. Fuck it.
Michael, let me give you an example of what you're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, the Golden State Warriors lost.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't about the loss. It was about the way they lost.
Okay.
Mike Brown out-coached Detroit Lightning.
Okay.
Mike Brown knew what buttons to push to beat the Golden State Warriors.
All right.
Do you think that one radio station was ahead? No. Do you think one TV station was ahead? No.
I don't want to be the dead horse, but if you're waiting for these folks to have a come to Jesus moment, it's never gonna happen. It's not gonna happen, Gary, because that's not what their front offices want to happen. Let's put it this way: you work for a newspaper, you're writing a story. Now, as your story is being edited, you got one pair of eyes looking at it, the media boss. Then you got the copy editor looking at it. And depending on how important the story is, maybe somebody from the executive branch of the paper is looking at it and saying, okay, we got the green light, run it. You got three pairs of eyes looking at least three, looking at it before it hits. If you see denigrating things out there, you got to wonder why. Not W, not X, but why. Is it still on the paper? It's on the paper because that's exactly what they wanted. You can't tell me that the editorial board at the LA Times couldn't put the draws on a story and the writer of the story. They meant for that shit to go on there. And that's why it was important that the black media check this son of a bitch who wrote this piece. So for Bot, bitch, whatever the fuck your name is,
Bot,
we know, well, whatever it is, crotch, your validity is about as worth it. It's worth as much as a $3 bill, you know. And you know, I'm not even trying to be funny. I get totally annoyed at this because the excellence, black excellence, being besmirched every time we do this. Let's not make this a light point.
Mike, I want to throw in. CNN did. CNN had a picture of the loser when South Carolina won the national championship, and they had Miss Becky, Miss All-American, on the front cover. Now, where was the editorial on that?
ESPN, right from the beginning, was getting a good winning thing. They were upset because they lost. They were upset.
Yeah.
But they couldn't stand it. Remember, it wasn't just the losing. It was how they lost. This wasn't like a last-second basket.
They ran off the court.
This is ass. You know, this is a good old-fashioned takeout to the woodshed. I'm going to whip that ass, and don't take this ass with them personally, but you're just not good enough.
And then when the sister shut her ass down, raving revenge, that really pissed them off. Don told her, go to work. That really made her mad. And she thinks that she got shut down in that game. What's she going to do when she go to the pros? She really going to get a reality check.
It is a reality check because these women are hungry. There are some women who are American born who, like, you go coming in and try to fuck with my money, I'm not having it. You got Lauren Jackson from Australia. You got the Brazilian chick, Pinochero. You got a whole bunch of ladies who are women.
Yeah.
Women.
Grown ass women.
And they're like, you're coming in here trying to mess with my daily bread. I'm not having it. And then you got your peers to deal with. We ran up a whole mess of mass show. Maya Moore, Shanika Holzclaw, Lynette Woodard,
Cheryl Miller.
It's like, are you kidding? This legacy of what you have to deal with.
But I got to ask the panel something about Saturday Night Live. What was y'all thoughts about her being on Saturday Night Live and a little skit they did? Was that to show up the brother, or that to just for them to get, you know, her?
Both.
That was embarrassing. And see, if I was like, I ain't doing that. I'm sorry.
And then gave him an apron. Know what that meant?
The thing is, I'm gonna throw this out here, and I want to get y'all's opinion on this. And again, I'm just so, you know, what if it's? I'm wondering if we were to find out that Ms. Clark was from the LBGQ. Would they embrace her in the same way?
Exactly.
They have a fucking stroke. Oh, hey, T, they put a Don Stiller interview with that right-wing extremist, asked her about the biggest problem in women's sports today is gender. What do you think about that? Asking her that question right before the biggest game in college basketball. She told him, you want to flood my line? Go ahead. I'm cool with that. But you got what you wanted. Clickbait.
Yeah, but not with that. Well, unfortunately, that's become the norm now. In regard, and
that's
but
right.
whether it's Jim Jeffries versus Jack Johnson, whether it's Jesse Owens thumbing the nose at Hitler and the United States, whether it's Jackie breaking the color barrier. Whether it's Ali, you know, saying that he's a Muslim, whether it's, you know, whatever, nothing's changed. Nothing's ever changed. It's just packaged differently. Here's the thing. I don't have any dislike or whatever for Clark. You know, let's put it this way. I don't think she's arrogant to the point of like Brett Favre where she thinks that she can sort of get away with stuff. Now am I trying to say that she's no bees or angel or whatever? No. She talks trash just like all her other peers.
She's a female wannabe Larry Bird.
even in that, it's the sort of thing where you have to know, you know, when you know the history and you know how these things are played out, and I think this is the thing that Michael and all of us upset, is that they've never changed their game plan.
No.
It's the same game plan, whether it's 17-24, 18-24, 19-24, or 2024. They've never changed their plan. They've never changed their attitude. And then when you call them out for it, they want to. You know, all of a sudden, they want to play. Here's the ultimate. They want to say, "Well, that's so long ago." Well, you guys are doing the same shit.
What's also missing is that there's a common thread in all this. And the common thread is the mental factor is never mentioned. It's not mentioned mm-hmm. that Dawn Staley outcoached her opposite from Iowa, or yep. that she outcoached the person from LSU or anywhere else. You know, yep. just like when Patrick Mahomes was kicking ass and throwing sideways and doing all this other shit, they say, wait a minute, there's somebody white who should get credit for this. No, there isn't. That's how it is. We got it like that. And that's the ultimate insult, was the fact that there was a special Black Magic on basketball. HBCU stars from yesterday. Our brother Fred Witt, who is in the audience now, was among those contributors. We spoke to the producer, and even he said the questions were answered. By the time Black Magic finished airing, we should have heard some truths. John B. McClendon was the father of the Four Corner Offense. John B. McClendon was responsible for A, B, and C, and not this bullshit with Dean Smith. Did we hear all this? No. Did we hear it? No. You know why? Because it's a Black thing, and you weren't supposed to be upset by it all. I'm upset by it all because it was a Black thing. This is a Black innovator doing it and doing it well, and whites got their ass butt hurt behind it. So, of course, Dean Smith had to be the progenitor of the Four Corners offense? Hell no. I mean, you didn't even have to be from North Carolina to know. Bogus. And I'm tired of hearing this nonsense. I got the professor on the line right now. And professor, excuse my Yankee attitude and arrogance here, but I got to say, I'm annoyed at the fact that this shit has gone on as long as it has. We need to tell our own stories. On that, I agree with you 1,000%. But when? I say when will this bullshit end? And good evening.
Well, good evening. I guess I can't say my fellow Yankees because I ain't no Yankee. Having said that, you know, I know Reggie, I think I heard Reggie's voice a little earlier.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, we see things looking from where we are and using the bridge in Baltimore as sort of a dividing line. You all are on the north side. We're on the south side. We see things a little different because unbeknownst to our dear Mr. Robinson, who is running for governor of North Carolina, who can't seem to have paid his taxes and all this other stuff. And I'm putting it up, what I'm saying is going to sound vague, but this is how it's done. You spread a whole lot of BS out there, but when you want to catch somebody or somebody catch you in something, you narrow it down to the weakest common denominator. So that way, we could always, remember that rap song from some years ago? See, this is where we can relegate this to.
This is great.
Why can't we just get along? Because we can't get along with you people. You know, you don't allow us to get along with you. Every time you screw up, you don't own it, but you want to own everything else. And you know, it's mind boggling if you let it boggle your mind. My way of dealing with it, just look at the facts as they are presented to us. We see, I was watching the other night and I ran across this video of Emmett Till from the original movie on Emmett Till's mother.
Yeah.
And how she said she wasn't going to go to I'm sure he's going to stay at the trial to hear the verdict. Well,
right.
Why not? Because I've seen this before. I know what the verdict is going to be. And sure as heck, guess what? She was right. You know, you don't have to be a prophet or an apostle, all that kind of stuff to know certain things. Some things are obvious. And when we go out and look at the various people who are doing, everybody's trying to make such a big deal out of name and likeness. Well, talk to the old heads from about 25, 30 years ago. You know, let's talk about a name. The Michael Jordan era and the different eras where we saw guys, you know, there was no image and likeness back then, but they all had money. You know, there used to be a gentleman who lived in Southern Pines, which is maybe an hour and a half from Chapel Hill. And every so often, he would have the team down to his house. Mm-hmm. Now, when I say his house, most people don't have a living room or a correction, a den that's, say, 1,800 square feet, you know, the size of a house. But the guys would put on their best show to go visit their uncle. Now, come on. Your blonde blue-eyed uncle who's straight here, who lives in a gated community, and, you know, and you go in and you come in with a and when I say a gated community, it's gated. Their guards have guns.
No Negroes allowed.
You know, and see all this kind of stuff, and you know, it's quite, you know, and you know, you just come to expect certain things from our side because we know enough about how people are. And the ones who aren't like that are not bold enough to speak their minds publicly because, you know, they're afraid of the bullies in Rome. And from time to time, you have to bust a bullet, you know, you tell them. Sometimes you got to bust a bully in the mouth. And, you know, I can't remember this guy's name. He played in the NBA he's been in the NBA about 10 years. He played at Carolina. And he was always seemingly in trouble. Eventually, he was practically put off the team. You know, they wanted him. They couldn't wait for him to go pro because he would challenge stuff. He was there when Roy Williams first came from Kansas back, quote, when Roy Williams came back home from Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had problem pronouncing guys' names. You know, and I can't remember the guy, but he was a North Carolinian. From Western North Carolina, down the road from where Roy Williams grew up, and Williams could not remember. You know, half the guys had quote unquote common names, you know, but the other half, you know, had. And he would make comments about how they dressed and how he, you know, the Carolinas have a thing, wear suits or a sport coat and a tie. That was their trademark, and you know. These are all cover ups to the fact that this man who had no problem pronouncing names of Kansas where he had all these white boys, when he comes back home to Carolina where he got scholarship players, there are probably 10, and then they have one or two others who are academic scholarship players who are some of usually white, but either way you look at it, these guys. Have never, this guy, quiet as it was kept in North Carolina media, this gentleman had problems pronouncing guys' names, so he would call them nick, you know, quote, he gave them all nicknames. And the gentleman, one of them just came back and said, hey, that's not my name. And from that point on, he was labeled. And eventually, they wanted him to go pro. They would have let him go pro and say, you know, they let him go catch Santa Claus going toward the professional team, and they let him. But see, we cannot since we do not control mass media in volume, then we can't control the narrative. But at the same time, though, we still got to tell our own story, because if we don't, it's going to go away. And
exactly.
I'm dealing with some situations right now. It will go away and will be, and you guys, you these millennials and below, whatever the new, you know, and it's kind of crazy to call them millennials, because most millennials are approaching 40 years old.
Right.
And if they don't care, what about their children?
Well, see.
They don't care, because they don't know.
It's a situational thing. They have to care. The situation predicates, if you don't care, that's going to be a problem down the road. I speak right now of something that's been a problem for at least 8-9 years, and that is the remake of The Longest Yard. When I mean The Longest Yard, I'm not talking about the Brett Reynolds movie, and I'm not talking about the remake with Adam Sandler. I'm talking about that damn Super Bowl, Seattle against New England.
Yep.
We had recently some rag trashing Russell Wilson because he implied that he set the standard for black quarterbacks. Russell, I love you, but as much as I respect you, General Wilson, the standard for black quarterbacks goes to one Chuck Ealy. Chuck Ealy is the only, and I mean the only, undefeated, untied quarterback in all of football. Yes, he went to Toledo. Toledo went 35-0. And before he got to Toledo, the high school he played for, they went undefeated. The man won 53 fucking games in a row before he lost or before he played in a professional setting. Chuck Ealy was the standard, not Russell Wilson. And unfortunately, Warren Moon, as great as he is, as great as stats that he put up, he gets lost in the shuffle because now this issue has come back to haunt everybody. We all saw it. Anybody who said they didn't saw it, you saw the highlights of it. Seattle's on the 1 yard line. It's like less than 45 seconds left to go in the game. Russell Wilson, through the fluke of hitting Jermaine Kearse, makes a real circus catch, ends up on the 5 yard line. From there, Marshawn Lynch gains 4 yards. Time is running short. Seattle has one timeout, and there's 1 fucking yard between not just Seattle scoring, but the fact that Seattle will have beaten the so-called icons in Peyton Manning and Tom Brady in 2 years. Back to back, and to add insult to injury, Russell Wilson was on his rookie contract, so he was making only about $750,000 when he was on that 1 yard line. Now, the issue is this: you got the front office sitting looking at this, and they're thinking, "Oh, we're gonna win. How do we win? Do we win because we let our battering ram run the ball into the end zone and score the winning points for us? Or do we try to get fucking cute and do something that's us and say, see, we want our way, and, you know, we didn't need Marshawn Lynch to win the game for us. We had the white coach to win the game for us. And Russell Wilson was a willing soldier. He followed orders and did what he was told. Now, as I go down the panel, I'm looking at all this. Fred, your offensive lineman, you know what the calls are and all the other stuff. You know it's easier to drive block than it is to relevate and backpedal and pass protect. Meanwhile, Reggie, you're watching from your vantage point. Russell Wilson's about to go in easily. You see the way he's making adjustments. You see them loading up. What you call Gary? You're looking at everything going on in the offensive interior. You see receivers moving, people in motion. You gonna call something? What are you gonna call, Tony? You're looking at the whole grand view of all this, and you're thinking to yourself, he's going to win. He's going to get in. Seattle, which is a vast wasteland for the National Football League, is now going to be a legit power. And now, how does this change the spin? Because they won Super Bowls back-to-back. They beat two of the best white quarterbacks that the league had to offer, and it's a shut-the-fuck-up moment. Gentlemen, what happens next?
Well, we all know what did happen, but what should have happened is that they should have ran the ball. But again, they, like you said, they're more worried about, you know, appearances and everything else. That's what made that whole thing even worse.
Well, gentlemen, I don't know if I've mentioned this. I'm working on some of the history of HBCU track and field. And you all probably wouldn't realize this right off the top of your head, but, you know, these kinds of shenanigans have gone on for years and years and years. Because early on, I just got the list of champions from NAIA, Coach of the Year, Player of the Year, you know, Athlete of the Year, that kind of stuff, right? And you'll notice that in the first few years, black colleges dominated men and women.
Yep.
Especially in the sprints.
Yep.
Well, guess what? And I just saw Coach Williams' name out there, but there's several others ahead of him. Coach Wright, the Wright brothers, as they were called. Even Coach Gaines coached track and field 1 year at Winston. You will notice, but if you look at Coach of the Year, Athlete of the Year, in the first few years, mostly went to white schools. Reason being, there were only about maybe a dozen or so HBCUs that went in NAIA. Some of them had dual membership in NAIA, but early on they couldn't be a member of the NCAA because the NCAA was so busy trying to keep black folks out and women. And as things transpired, eventually somebody says, hey, how can this coach get Coach of the Year? His team scored 45, 50 points. And here's a coach over here whose team scored over 100 points. That don't make no sense. So slowly but surely, the northern and western schools started voting for black athletes as well as black coaches. Yeah. And my point behind this is very simple. When you look at this, and you've heard me say this before, the game is controlled not by players and coaches, but by referees. Yep. You've seen that in the last 5 years, more prevalently, as well as from far, far more different angles, how they do it. You know, a guy gets you know, Marshawn Lynch. All you hear him talk about is he's gonna run power, power left, power right, power left, power right. It was on a silver platter right there waiting for him to just take the ball and go in. Listen, Russell Wilson could have, you know, dived over the line because he was, you know. in, he was on or inside the 1 yard line. And less, from the way it looked on my TV, it was less than a 4 yard into the end zone. So that's all he had to do. But remember, we're talking about the sports entertainment business. Everything that looked like something to you ain't what it. But you're not seeing the real. You can see the real deal. Now,
you're right.
I'm sure that I'm pretty sure that the people in the front office, i.e., the owners, i.e., the president and all the administrators, the players gonna get the pick. What I call the 50-50 shot. You get 100. You get 50,000 if you win. 25 if you lose. That's already set in stone. Plus whatever comes with your endorsements and whatnot for making the Super Bowl. But guess what? Who got the money to pay to owners and other administrative people to include the newspapers? Look at how they all say the same thing. Look at the television, and if you listen to some of the original calls on several of the Super Bowl games, I know they did voiceovers and that kind of stuff on some of these games, but come on the originals, look at how the storyline so closely follows what you see on the screen, as if it was. How do you call it? You phone in the score?
Yep.
And see, that, again, it's the sports entertainment business by virtue of that it's a show.
Hold that thought, Fred. Hold that thought. I got Patrick Farrar with me in house. Patrick has been in the front office for years. Patrick, we know it's not as simple as the guy going in and winning the game. It's who goes in and how they win and other things that got nothing to do with the ball being on the 1 yard line. We know that Marshawn Lynch, if he gets the ball, it's very likely that he scores the winning points. Now, Marshawn Lynch had been made a story and a subject byline since the Super Bowl, since the playoffs began. They liked his irreverent humor. They liked the fact that he seemed to be a bit of an iconoclast, that he was different. Not that he was malicious or bad, but just different. The Seattle front office were kind of like wondering, what the fuck do we do with this? Because it was clear they did not want Marshawn Lynch to be the hero. You're in the front office. You tell me, what is their mindset? Are we right or are we wrong? And good evening.
Well, good evening, everybody. Hopefully everybody's okay. Good talking with you. I will tell you this. The downside of that Seattle losing that game affects them today.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's that devastating, somebody made a wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
Who that is and who it was and why he did it, I don't know. It's been 8 years. But the result is, like my grandfather, great-grandfather used to say, the result is that it's affected the franchise till today.
Exactly.
And to that extent, a decision like that would be more likely to come from obviously the coach's booth and the head coach and on the ground level. That's why I was surprised. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if it were baseball. Why?
Uh-huh.
Because analytics in baseball has got out of freaking hand. You got guys calling what they should pitch from upstairs. What? It's going on big time. I didn't know the extent of it till about 4 years ago when somebody I knew in the Yankee organization, he says, you know, we're going to call upstairs what he's doing. What?
Mm-hmm.
So baseball, it's not in your company. But football is a little different. Football, those decisions are made at the moment in which the situation can occur. I'm not saying that someone didn't have that in their mindset, but the idea of winning back-to-back Super Bowls that was disseminated and really taken away from them at that point can never be brought back. So whatever decision they made up, it don't look good from now in 2024.
Exactly. Tony, do you think...
Hey, Michael, think about this. Okay, Kansas City won the Super Bowl last year, right?
Right.
Kansas City should be the best team in the American League Conference again this year, right?
Right.
I'll bet you right now, they will not win the Super Bowl this year.
I don't know. Mahomes is that good. What I can't see.
No, they don't want back to back. They don't want bad guy to win back to back because I know what you said.
Yeah, Tony.
Well, he's already done back to back now, so.
Oh, yes.
Didn't they not repeat, Gary? They just repeated, Gary.
He's not won back-to-back Super Bowl. You know, he's been in them, but he hasn't won them.
They won back-to-back because they beat Philadelphia, and then
they beat Philly, and then they defended it, beating this past year. I know what you're trying to say, but they did go to at least Patrick did do the back to back. Now no one's ever done three in a row in the end of the NFL. But we'll see about that. We'll see. I mean Yeah, exactly. The closest, I guess, was the Niners, and they lost, you know, that game with the Giants. But you know, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, let's put it this way: even with all the moves, they're still going to be the favorite to at the very least three-peat as AFC champs.
Mm-hmm.
But see. Those damn facts always get in the way of the truth. I refer to Warren Moon. Warren Moon won 5 Grey Cups in a row. 5. You know, I don't care if it's Tiddlywinks or Big Bits. He won 5 in a fucking row. That makes you pay attention. And nobody is saying a word. They think,
Michael,
well, he won 5 in a row, he might be okay. And it's like, it's
Michael,
not okay. It's exceptional. Okay, Fred.
See, there you go again. Remember, Miss Clark is the all-time leading scorer for the Division I.
Yep.
NCAA.
Yep.
In spite of the fact there's at least 2 other sisters who got more points. One was AIA, NAIA. One is AIWA.
Yep.
And neither one, and remember, one of the reasons that they expect specifically the AIAW was established was because the NCAA was in court fighting, having to sponsor women athletics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't mention that side of things, and they keep it as quiet as possible. But Ms. Moore her record is over. It was over 4,000 points, but that doesn't matter because she. Listen, what I'm saying. She was not NCAA because at the time, always gets this. This gets this. Oh, this. This is the part that goes under the table. At the time, the NCAA was spending enough money they could have sponsored women's sports. But they were spending all that money in court. They didn't want, and see, people forget about two-thirds of the teams that are NCAA Division I today were NAIA and or AIWA. AIAW. You know, little schools like East Carolina.
They're making a lot of college.
Appalachian State. You know, A&T, you know, see, A&T and Winston-Salem and North Carolina Central and Hampton, they were not allowed in NCAA Division I or even Division, what they called college division at the time. They milked all the goody out of them. And see, this is why, you know, several players that you see coming along during that time, i.e., you know, they went to HBCUs because they were better than the white schools that were in the NAIA at the time.
Okay.
And just looking down the list, you know, because early on, the SWAT, the NAIA track and field competition looked like SWAT competition because that's who, you know, they Texas Southern and Texas Southern and Purview looked like they were just taking turns being head of the NAIA. But see, they play that name game so that, you know, it's Michael's house or it's Reggie's house or it's Patrick's house. It's not just a house on the street, and they make sure they say it that way, and I know some people who work behind the mic at the NCAA competition this year. There was this was the kind of thing they were told to be mindful of. Make sure you call it NCAA Division I.
Yeah, I know that. I know that. I understand what you're saying, but I reiterate, it's these damn facts that give away everything. The facts remain Russell's children, or rather Russell's overlooking the New England defense. He's watching everything move in front of him. He's calling signals. At any time during that, he could have killed the play. He could have killed, but he was a good soldier. Reggie, was his military background what caused him to falter because he wanted to be a good soldier and follow orders, or he wanted to be bold and say, we're going to win this damn game. I know how to win the game, but I don't want to be disruptive.
Ready there? Michael, can I answer that, please?
Yes, please.
Okay, all right. Being a military son, I'll tell you what the answer is. You follow orders. You follow complete orders.
Mm-hmm.
You may think it's wrong. You may think it's disruptive. But you follow it because General Gray said you're doing X, Y, Z. That's what you do.
Okay, I get that. I get that. But that's one aspect of it. As I hear Patrick laughing a little bit underneath all this, he's like, the offensive coordinator said, we're going to run this. And this should work. Why? It's a pass. it's going across the line of scrimmage. It's like it's only 1 yard. Even I know in math, the shortest distance between 2 points is a fucking straight line. So if I'm going to throw the ball, I'm going to throw a straight line. If nothing else, if I don't throw a straight line, I throw the ball at such an angle that I fade the ball to a certain part of the end zone where only my receiver can get it and not the defensive back. Meanwhile, on the offensive line, again, everybody's watching for movement. Right? You know the referees are watching that shit. Now, you know it's easier to drive block than to backpedal and relevate and pass block. If Russell changes to the drive, if he changes the play to a run play, power right, power left, whatever. If he changes to a running play and you know all you got to do is bull rush and drive forward, does the referee call holding? Does he call a penalty, in your opinion?
Well, from at the professional level, especially where they were located on the field, most likely they were in a crouch stance anyway. You don't have the ability to do a lot of moving. Everything is straight ahead, slant right, slant left, and that's it. And you do that for one of two reasons. And one of the main reasons you do that is you want to give the offensive lineman the best possible chance to catch at least part of the defensive player. You're coming in low, so he's not going to jump up in the air.
Right. No man wins.
And then at some point between the two guards and the center, there's a hole going to be created because you can only catch one of them straight on.
Right.
Everybody else is chipping. And if the linebacker is coming over the top, you still got the advantage. And remember, you're not talking about Pee Wee Herman jumping through there. We're talking about Marshawn Lynch, with all likelihood, going through there.
Exactly.
You know, the brother's strong as an ox. He's a little on the big side, strong as an ox, and he's quick. And all he got to do is get 1 yard.
Okay, gentlemen. Also, here's another thing. And Marshawn is going to touchdown. Guess what? Holding on the offense. Go back 50 yards. That was versus the team. Versus the goal on the team line. Right?
Yeah. But, you got to look at the end result. Marshawn scores. Seattle wins, was it 31-27 or 28, whatever the fuck it is. And there's no way New England can catch up and score the points to either tie it or win it. So the next day, paper comes out, Seattle wins Super Bowl 49 or whatever the number was, and they go back-to-back. The newspaper says, Russell Wilson or Marshawn Lynch or whomever is the MVP. Tom Brady is beaten. Now, what are you going to do, NFL, when it comes to the spin? Because the rookie, remember, Russell's a rookie. He's got his rookie contract. He's only played three seasons. In those three seasons, he's won a Super Bowl. And he's just won back-to-back Super Bowls. What do you do with this? This is Mahomes before Mahomes, and everybody's like, oh, shit, now what? Patrick.
You play it out because of the obvious. that Seattle made a mistake. And, again, it's directed by folk on the ground, not in the booth, on the ground, because who made the decision? I will point this out. There is enough nuance to speculate from here to the Himalayas. But I will say this. Here in 2023, we talk about what Russell Wilson should have done. As I recall, Russell Wilson this year threw 26 touchdown passes and only 6 interceptions. And he went 4 in a row in terms of dynasty back in playoff position. And for some reason or another, during the game, his head coach, Sean Payton, totally undresses him on national TV. What did Russell
do?
What did he do? Russell sit there and took it like he was a soldier. Now, if that was you and me or somebody else, we'd have told Sean Payton to kiss my ass, get the out of my face.
Exactly.
On national TV. Well, that's not Russ. That's not him. So if he's still going to throw the pass, he's going to throw the pass. Now, the rest of the system, why they threw a pass from Pete Carroll and that offensive coordinator, who should never coach another team in the NFL. But white boy, you can be stupid and get away with it. But Russ was going to do what he was told. Let me ask you this question. If that was Lamar Jackson, if that was Tom Brady, was there any other quarterback in the league, and they saw 1 yard, come on, please.
Exactly. They wouldn't do that.
As a matter of fact, Mike, the 1 yard, I've said for years, you get an offensive tackle that's 6'3", 289, 290 pounds, put him in front of the running back, game over. And the Patriots knew it. That's why they're surprised they didn't do it.
You don't realize how far a yard is until you take that step. You walk a football field and you walk 1 yard. 1 yard, that's not even a full stride. A full stride is 2, maybe 3 yards, depending on how far you're going. But I refer back to another 1 yard
situation.
One stride.
1 yard straight.
And Steve McNair is going to throw the ball to Dyson, tie the game against the St. Louis Rams. Now it's a crossing pattern. A crossing pattern, 2 steps. You move across, boom. The ball's there. Your second foot should be at the goal line. You're in. The momentum from the ball is carrying your ass in the end zone if you run the pattern right. People forget the obvious. Dyson ran a shitty pattern. Steve McNair did his job. He threw the ball where it should have gone, but Dyson did a lousy job of putting his body in position where his momentum would carry him across the line, so even the linebacker's tackle couldn't have stopped him from scoring.
Different story. Different story. Mike, they're on the 1 yard line. He ain't got a stretch. He's on the 1 yard line. And somebody decided to do something stupid.
Yep.
And to this day, any explanation Pete Carroll gives is nothing but the company line. That's why he's not coaching the team this year. But guess where he's at now? In the front line.
Think about this. The past 8 years, African-American quarterbacks have led their team to the Super Bowl, right?
Mm-hmm.
But ever since the guy in Philadelphia, Ever since they have been black quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. Ever since.
Right.
But and they got a problem.
Cam Newton.
They got a problem. They have a problem realizing that this is not what they planned. They didn't mind.
That's true.
They didn't mind 4 or 5 black quarterbacks.
That's right.
They do mind. 15 or 20 black quarterbacks. It's like it went from a couple of Negroes with a couple of egos to where all these niggas come from, and that's exactly what they're dealing with. It's like with Doug Williams one. Man,
and Mike, I can tell you why, Mike. I can tell you why.
Why?
I said it over 25 years ago. I said it over 25 years ago. When a guy named Lawrence Taylor came in the league, right?
LT.
And at that point, it was already being seen, but it wasn't as to the point where it dominated a lot of decisions until Donald Lawrence Taylor came in the league, and everybody else wanted to find Lawrence Taylor. And the reason they did is because of the fact that the game was expanding beyond the hash lines into space. And the reason it went into space is because the speed of the game changed on defense.
Yeah.
The best athletes are going on defense, not offense. And the people
I would agree with that, but people forget football is about matchups. When Doug got up and got back in the huddle with Washington, Ricky Sanders said straight up in the huddle, not that I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, that safety, Tony Lilly, he's too slow. He can't touch me.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug looked at him and said, I know that's right. Let's run the 8. Just get out there on the flat. And, I mean, it wasn't even close. We look at those highlights nowadays, and as they're playing hail to the so-called Redskins, Ricky Sanders is running by Tony Lilly and the Denver defense. And he didn't do it once. He did it twice.
You know, Mike, you know what I did early this week? I was up late and I was writing. I got writing something and I stopped writing, but couldn't go to sleep.
Yeah.
And on YouTube, I looked on something on YouTube. I looked at 18 minutes of a game played in 1967.
Uh-huh.
You know what it was? The first Super Bowl. Green Bay playing Kansas City.
Right.
And the way the game was played, who starred in the game? It's amazing how they played inside the hash lines. Now they play outside the hash lines. Those guys today would have a different game. So they had to match that because of the fact that the speed of the game brought in, first of all,
I told you, was
Lawrence Taylor, but also a guy named Bob Hayes.
Thank you.
Who opened the game up in terms of defensive back chase, which is why they got, what's his name? God, I forgot his name. Played with the Giants. But the point was the game opened up. Well, it took them 30, 40 years to realize if you got speed on defense, you know, we got to match it offensively. And that's why the game, they have the quarterbacks in the pocket. But you know something? Let me tell you something else I told somebody a while back. Don't tell me about, you know, drop back quarterbacks and guys have to be in pocket. But for years, the guy who has the most yards thrown in the NFL was a guy named Fran Tarkenton. Did Fran Tarkenton stay in the pocket?
No.
Another guy,
right.
Praying talking didn't stay when the lineman
there
stayed.
There you go. And Roger Staubach didn't stay in the pocket. Nobody said nothing about them. You know?
But
then they criticized the ones who stay in the pocket, too. They called them extra quarterbacks.
Exactly. They're damned if you do and damned if you don't. And that's why the how you win is what shuts everyone the fuck up. When Patrick Mahomes won, everybody was like, yeah, all right, can we do it again? And when he did it again, everybody shut the fuck up. When he was throwing balls sidearm, they were raising their eyebrows like, oh, gee, he's got eyes in the back of his head. No, Patrick is just good at what he does, and he knew where everybody on the field was. Russell Wilson, early on in his career, knew where everybody on the field was. You can't tell me if you are a Seattle Seahawk, you're in the huddle, and you know I'm going to run my pattern, and if I don't do this by 3 seconds, I break my pattern off, and I just find an open space, and Russell will find me. Every receiver he had did the same fucking thing, whether it was Jerome Kearse, Paul Richardson, or Golden Tate, or Lockett. They all did the same damn thing. The tight ends, Sidney Rice, everyone who ever played Russell, they knew. You get open, I got you. I mean, Baldwin will probably go to the Hall of Fame because he lived off of Wilson's leftovers. Wilson would find a spot in the field, he'd buy time, and Baldwin would get open, and he'd find him. That's what a good receiver is supposed to do. The mental aspect is not being it's not being given its proper due. And that's why the standard set for a black quarterback really goes to Doug Williams. It takes smarts to say, I'm going to listen to Ricky Sanders. If I see that mismatch is like that downfield, I'm going downfield. I mean, remember those touchdowns that Williams threw? Did Ricky Sanders beat him by a little bit? He beat him by a mile. He was at least 2 strides ahead of Tony Lilly, and that goes for the Gary Clark catch, too. Clark was at least open a couple of yards, and the Clint Didier touchdown, he was a stride ahead. Those were all mental decisions made by Doug Williams. And they don't get the credit that they're supposed to get.
I can't deny it, you know. I taking it back a little further, imagine if they let the Lord's Prayer run the ball.
Lord have mercy! See, this is what I mean by defending black athletes. Eldridge Dickey, people may not realize this, Eldridge Dickey was undefeated during the camp that he was in. He won every game. Now, these are exhibition games, but he won every game. How frustrating must it be to win your games and then have the coach look at you and say, I'm sorry, Ken, you got to sit down. We're going to start Stabler. But you know what? Since you're so talented, we're going to let you play receiver, you know? But I'm a quarterback coach. Yeah, but we think you can be a receiver. Instead of Dickey saying, fuck you, coach, he's being a good soldier. And that did more damage to him than because...
The reason why he said because he wanted a job. He wanted to keep his job.
I know he wanted to keep his job.
With the guy in Denver back in 1962.
Yeah, I know, but Gary, what's frustrating is that I met Marlon Briscoe, and Briscoe told me that Dickie was so depressed with the fact that he had to play receiver, that he got caught up in a bad habit. And ironically, Warren Wells, the great receiver, was caught up in substance abuse.
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
He's got the best average per reception, but supposedly he didn't have enough catches qualified. He should be in the Hall of Fame, but he's not there. He's not there because somebody else decided that's too much talent for one black man to have. That's too much gift for one black man to have. That's too much intelligence for one black man to have. The brothers were doing it on all levels, and the white media couldn't shoot it down. They couldn't make excuses about, oh, it was this and oh, it was that. And they couldn't denigrate it. Oh, we gave this nigga all this money, and look what he did. It seems far-fetched, but you better believe it. They were frustrated because they couldn't find any way to dig this out, come up with something that would be deleterious to the brother's future. I got
Mike
Delaware with me as well.
Mike, just imagine if we go back 50 years, 55 years, 60 years, and they had the wide-open offense that they have now with Jefferson C.J. at quarterback.
Exactly. Chuck Noll wasn't blind. He saw what the fuck was going on. Gillum was hitting his people. He was winning games. Let's be real. If we have to add up all the games that Gillum really won, Gillum was 10-1. He won the 6 exhibition games. He won 4 games during the regular season, and he was 10-1-1 before that bitch sat his ass down and they played Bradshaw. And no knocking his feelings, Fred, but that's the truth. And even Bradshaw admitted it. Gillum was better.
He knew it.
Tennessee States, Eldridge, Tennessee States, you know, Joe Gilliam, for, you know, just to make that official.
Yeah.
But if you, all that aside, you know, they got some snaps in the center. You know, I mean, Eldridge Dickey, the keep the job thing, you know, I don't know. I mean, the brothers weren't raised to be sellouts and bootlickers and just kiss the asses just to keep a job, not coming from out of that institution. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was more or less like, you know, you got a family, you got to feed them. And, you know, you go through that process, and they probably gave him a promissory note that, you know, you can play quarterback, but let's start you at receiver, which is still a quarterback, you know, so that's the hook.
But
they didn't get 100%, based on the pride factor, they couldn't go 100%. Listen, you know, run back some kickoffs, this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
If you, you know, I mean, people go back that many years, but, I mean, Charlie Ward was the prototype quarterback. He was the Heisman Trophy winner, didn't even get drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, went to the NBA, and he was, you know, an adequate backup guard for the Knicks for many years and productive, but it still was his second career. He was better as a quarterback under center at Florida State.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was Russell Wilson before Russell Wilson.
Yet.
And he was nice. Charlie Ward's footage at Florida State, you know, you can't play at FSU when they were a powerhouse back then and ball like the way he balled. And so he
and
was
they
so nice.
He
was so nice, they had to give him the Heisman as a quarterback. And he was a passing quarterback. He wasn't a Condridge Holloway. He wasn't them brothers from, you know, Oklahoma, that wishbone, you know, Thomas Lott and Tommy Frazier at Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of quarterback.
Green.
Throw the rock. He had receivers. He could play. He could play press. That's why he was such a good NBA point guard. He's basically playing quarterback as an NBA player. And his decision-making carved out a lot of years in the NBA as a backup point guard, which was still his second-best position. And rarely do you see a person get that much tenure in another professional sport, especially something like hoop, that was considered the best player in college football.
That's true.
And also again, it falls back to the idea, I got to give Bobby Bowden some credit. he had an offense that fit his style too. He's one of the very few college quarterbacks, particularly
Warren
in the
Warren could
South.
Throw the fade, Patrick. He could throw the bomb. He could throw on the run. He could throw on the left. He could play in the pocket.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
He was a nice pocket passer, and he was accurate.
And but that goes to the small mindedness of a lot of NFL owners and GMs.
Well, I mean, what kind of athlete do you have that's the best football, the best player in college football carves out maybe with a double-digit career as an NBA backup guard for a playoff team, not a whack team, not some, sub-500 team. He was with the Knicks, playoff team. You know what I mean? And he was getting a lot of run.
Yeah.
And yet, he was college football's best player as a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
that
what
the 80s.
That was in the 80s, right?
90s, 80s, late 80s.
That brings me back to my original.
No, early 90s.
He got the guy that's the best, and you still can't admit it. You can't admit it. He was already shown he was the best, and you can't admit it. And since we brought up the Lord's Prayer and Gillum, you have to also include Chuck Ealy.
Going to see my man Chuck next.
He never lost.
Chuck next. Never lost in college.
He never lost a fucking game. He
yes,
won a
indeed,
great
my man.
In his rookie season. And he didn't just win it. I mean, he generaled the team down the field, and he beat the Hamilton Tiger Cats and won the Grey Cup his first time out. He never played Canadian football before. Even though he was up there, he never played CFL ball. And he won his first time now. That's mental. That's understanding the deal.
Yes, indeed.
That's adjusting and adapting.
Again, the small minds of the GMs.
It's actually the small manner of society, because
that's true too.
The GM was at the point, but they were playing to a bigger audience who tolerated that nonsense.
We can do it, but you can't. We're gonna talk to him. Well, let's go back and run around, but you even that no playing Bobby Douglas could play to run around.
Thank you.
But you can't.
Thank you. That no playing Bobby Douglas.
Well, I mean, but then again, if you
you left off one great one. The guy that used to play behind Sonny Jurgensen, remember him?
Ooh,
Billy Kilmer.
No?
Billy Kilmer. Remember, he had a range of about 8 to 12. He had a passing range of about 8 to 12 yards.
To that point, Joe Capp threw the ball without using the seams.
He
was such a horrible quarterback.
But then again,
the University of Minnesota had a brother named Sandy Stevens.
Yeah, Sandy Stevens is All-American first team.
First team All-American. First brother to quarterback a team in the Rose Bowls in the 60s.
That's right.
Yep.
All right. So in other words, there's a lot of these, go-tos. We can talk Moon. We can talk Jane. We can talk Shaq Harris. We can talk Briscoe. Those are common. But this brother named Sandy Stevens is balling out of control as a brother quarterback at the University of Minnesota. And don't forget that Jimmy Ray, longtime offensive coordinator from Fayetteville.
That's right.
Quarterback Michigan State in that so-called Kill Bubba Kill game when he played Notre Dame, were tied for the number one overall.
And remember, you got to remember, Notre Dame kicked the football to tie the game. They didn't play to win.
And there was a brother under center from Michigan State named Jimmy Ray.
Yes.
Quarterback.
Number 16.
Yeah.
Went to school 3 miles away.
Long time NFL assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No, I'm
and they drafted him as the center. They drafted him as a defensive back in the 16th round. This is what they, this is what I'm bitching about. They can't stand the fact that our excellence transcends what we do.
Mike, what did I tell you what happened today on the obvious fourth in line with our annual comment about how we're going to shift to put certain people in positions to be drafted.
Today they had
the Washington Commanders did something that was totally unprecedented. Four guys.
Brock Birdie, 200, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's a hero. Get out of here.
Mm-hmm. Well, today the Washington Commanders, who need a quarterback being a hard knee slot, they brought in Drake May, Kid McDaniels, Penix, and Bo Nix, all need to speak, not individually, all at one time.
That's right.
It wasn't J.J. McCaffrey. I have never heard of that in all my years.
Washington, they don't have
what are y'all trying to prove?
Exactly. I predict Washington will take either Drake, probably take May or Nix, but they won't pick a black quarterback. They wouldn't dare pick Michael Phoenix. And they'll probably say something about the bad experience they had with the other brother that he drafted, Hastings. May he rest in peace. The bottom line, Haskins, rather. The bottom line is it's a mental situation. The standard that black quarterbacks carry, it goes beyond just playing the position. And if we're watching that play again on the 1 yard line, I'm sitting there saying to myself, what the fuck? Because that ball should never have left Russell Wilson's hand.
That's true.
He should either give it to Marshawn Lynch or he should have dived. Either way, the game should have been in his hands. After you look at the way the Philadelphia Eagles used the Brubley shove, you would think that's what they should have done. Anything but throw the ball in the air. He put the ball in the air. It cost him. And Seattle, I think, forget about Bobby Lane. I think Seattle is cursed. They're gonna have problems with this for years because one silly-ass white boy, Pete Carroll, tried to be cute. And the other silly-ass white boy, Darrell Bevell, has no business being a fucking offensive coordinator. Or as LL Cool J said, in any given Sunday, he's an offensive coordinator. Yeah, offensive is right.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking awful.
He's up for a job now. Again.
Yep.
Michael, if the game plan was already set, and the Seattle Seahawks, we're not going to win back-to-back. We're going to make sure of that. What Russell Wilson did was upset the apple cart.
That's my point. No. It's like, no. I understand your argument, but I cannot agree with that. Russell Wilson could have toppled the NFL.
No, what I'm saying is, the play was already in place.
I know. Well, let's just say the ability to spin it would have changed if he kept the ball. You know, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl, and he still hasn't scored. I looked at the film. That motherfucker didn't cross the finish line. He did not break the play. So as far as I know, he hasn't scored. The referee said he scored, but he didn't score. If Russell Wilson keeps the ball, if he keeps the ball, at the very least, the game is in his hand.
Bobby Wagner and Richard Sherman, since you know they're well past, they both talk about when the play was called on that incline or wherever it was.
Yes, they did.
That when
yeah.
the play was called, Marshawn Lynch gave the finger to the sideline
because
he knew he wasn't getting the rock. So when he got the play call, he looked towards the sideline and gave him the finger. This is his teammates. And his teammates all fought Russell Wilson, Sherman, Wagner. They all fought Wilson for that decision-making. But it's the same play. You know, Brady was the great jigger killer. You know what I'm saying? Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, Patrick Mahomes, all 0-3 compared to the Brady factor. So these things all have a pertinence to them. You know what I mean? All three could have, you know, were better quarterbacks in weight and athleticism, but Brady clipped them as far as getting those three Super Bowl rings. So what's the coincidence that's at the same trifecta with the same player? Well, oh no, Manning got Cam. Manning clipped Cam, so I'm sorry about that, the other great hope. And so these are how the scripts are written. And you see Peyton Manning everywhere, you know, advertisements galore, you know, doing whole things. And Cam, he's got to beat down guys at the 7-7 tournament in Atlanta.
Here's a question, everybody. If that were Peyton Manning or Brady, would they have changed that call? No, of course they would have changed it. They would have changed the call.
Well, basically, Manning and Peyton, you know, they are not throwing the rock, they're handing the shit off.
Yeah, that's my
period. So in other words, Wilson becomes a footnote. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. And the strange part about that is when Seattle blew out Denver, and Denver led the NFL in offense, and they played that one at the Meadowlands, right, Patrick, MetLife.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, nothing about Denver's offense looked like it had been all season. There was no Legion of Boom shit.
Sure
Denver was a total different team. Didn't even look the same. And there's a brother named Sean Moreno that played for the team. He's out of Jersey, Middletown South High School.
Yep.
He tore it up down there.
He
didn't even play the second half. And everyone was talking about, what is the hell is John Fox doing with an onside kick to start the second half?
Second half. That was the killer.
Right? I mean, there was some strange shit. But see, here's the trade-off. If that was so much the dominance of Seattle and so much of what they shut down, then, okay, all right, then we can't have the same thing happen the next year when you throw a half-yard interception. There was such a rah-rah sis-kumba on a very strange game.
Let me add to that. You threw a half-yard interception across the field. You threw it across the field. You didn't throw
Matthew Butler. I mean, I know he's got great instincts as a cornerback. I don't think he's ever going to go to the Hall of Fame, but shit. He was Mel Blunt, Rod Woodson, Lester Hayes, Mike Haynes combined the way he read that play.
No shit.
Mm-hmm.
He read that pass like the New York Times.
Damn, he jumped that play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, almost as if he knew what was coming.
He probably didn't know what was coming.
Belichick and his spies.
Yeah. There you go. He probably didn't
know what was coming. I'm just saying. I ain't never seen a guy jump the ball. I mean, shit, put him in the Hall of Fame the way he read that play.
Yeah, really. Yep. All I'm saying is that Black excellence gets ignored by the reality of sports entertainment. Fred talked about this a long time ago. It's just annoying to see it rear its ugly head up again. Reggie, are you here?
Yes, sir.
Come on.
Right, in color.
Yo, Reg.
All right, great job. Well, I said I'm the number one Dawn Staley cheering fan. And what I love about her is that she gives love to Vivian Springer. Now, Professor knows back in the day when Chaney
had the ferocious John Chaney, and also Vivian Springer. They scared NCAA so bad that they had the nerve to go to the Final Four. And I'm sure there was some shady calls back then, so we know
very shady calls.
Couldn't make it what she wanted, which brings me to the WNBA draft. Once again, they try to draft the players in that region, like the young lady from Stanford. Mysteriously, she get drafted to L.A., even though we know Cardoso was better. But Saturday Night Live had me cracking up because they had to get their ratings up so bad. And Patrick, I'm sure they had to get in the boardroom and say, get that girl up here right now. Even though we have a plethora of black women, including the coach of the Chicago team, that has won championships, where Miss Goat, a.k.a. Ohio, Lily White face. And they don't give no love to the sister. The little sister that played her little ass off. You don't hear nothing about her. She was balling her little ass off. She was hanging with the sister for a while.
Freshman.
But then again, white supremacy never takes a day off. And I'll say this in closing. Isn't it amazing, again, that how they now try to use their language to talk about transgender? And by the way, Coach Don Staley, since you're in the biggest game ever, but we want you to talk about transgender and what goes on in women's sports. That's the game the right wing is playing now. That's the game we're playing. Just not food for thought.
And you know something? Of the 40 games that the team is playing, 36 is going to be on national television. Unprecedented.
36. Now you know somebody tried to make some money. Patrick,
they're going to make money. Final thought?
Yep.
Okay. We all know all the nonsense going on, who's going to play quarterback. But I've done a lot of my reading, and I reached out to some people. And there is a quarterback that might not be drafted on that day, but people who are thinking about how the position is expanded are looking at a guy named Darius Richmond out of North Carolina Central. Some folks are intrigued by and need to be intrigued by, because he was offered to play the year in the league. And then 6'2", 220 pounds. I didn't know much about him, and I had to get some information, but somebody's looking at him, and don't be surprised if you see a guy named Joe Milton out of Tennessee. Somebody's going to get smart. He's 6'4", 250. Don't be surprised. And I'll leave it at that as we talk next week.
All right, shit. There you go. Hot news, legitimate news. And, somehow the mouse, the rat, the murinate, somehow they're going to fuck it up. They're going to fuck it up and say something else for the brother making some cash. Fred, come on in.
Well, let me start by dipping in the family genes again. My nephew, Jackson Spells, scored his 100th goal today. One of the leading high school lacrosse players in North Carolina. And as I said before, we'll have two cousins two nephews at Duke next year. One playing basketball, one playing lacrosse. They both have signed already yes, they do take after me a little bit.
I don't want to say that.
I can spell lacrosse, and I can spell basketball. So I'm a genius.
How about Blue Devil?
Literally, we're having a separation within the family, because we have a number of people who are Carolina fans, and
yes,
several, one of their first cousins already told him, I'm going to watch the game with the TV down, with the sound turned down, and all this other kind of stuff. But more on the real, in the last week or so, we've had one of our favorite people, especially Reggie, to criticize Mr. Robertson, who has been nominated for the Republican Party to run for governor of North Carolina.
Yeah.
And it seems that he seemed to have escaped all forms of racism and so forth in North Carolina, although he grew up in Greensboro, where the first sit-ins were, first official sit-ins and all that other stuff. He's had problems in the last several years paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And an organization his wife was affiliated was actually running, and they ended up having to close down because some Republicans didn't like it. You know, it shows you God will fix it if you let him, because this guy, to me, he's as bad as, if not worse, than some of the racists and white supremacists are, because he denies everything as if it never happened.
And his wife has an abortion. His wife has an abortion.
Yes. We could literally do a whole show on how he screwed up up one side and down the other. But hopefully, you know,
All right, Fred, we can get through this. Fred, last time I asked, I promise this last time I asked, if Russell kills the play and keeps the ball or gives the ball off the list, will there be a penalty call, yes or no?
Personally, I think there would have been a penalty of some kind, almost like the night when the guy from Butler shot from half court against Duke in the Sweet 16 or Final Eight, whatever. If that ball had gone in, the trail official would have called traveling or something.
Uh-huh.
So that's literally how the NCAA satisfies gamblers, because you know it is a subjective call. It's whatever that referee said is he traveled. And see, that's not a call you can go back and, I mean, they can run it back and forth as all they want to. It won't change, you know, changing nothing in the game.
There's no cheating in sports, says Tim Donahue.
Yep, there you go. That's exactly right.
Yeah, interesting.
So suspicious.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, the Toronto Raptor just got banned from the NBA for gambling and sports. So, you know, I mean,
stupid.
Giving up all the intel.
Stupid.
So, but none of what we say here about how that was an active, ongoing situation on sports is true, right? That's a bad case. Oh, Shohei and Ohtani. Shohei and Ohtani's not gambling. Oh, no. That's just
interpretive. Well, Canada just got legalized gambling the first of the month, so.
I mean, it is so rigged. You know, Michael Jordan never gambled on games he played in. Of course not. You know, he wouldn't do that. He's too honorable. So moving ahead, you know, Monica Price of Fisk University was the first HBCU athlete to win a national championship in the gymnastics. National champion,
yes.
Came out of Fisk University.
Yes. Yes.
Awesome work, awesome attributes. You know, Fisk University, walking distance from Tennessee State. I gotta admit that maybe my first five girlfriends in college were located at Fisk University. So fond memories.
Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord. Lord, Lord, Lord. Look, break a young man in. Break a young man into the ways of the world. listen, and to keep it 100% and honest, you know, most of those dates were held in the library at the university libraries, ladies and gentlemen. It's all in study hall. So long story short, Monica Price,
I'm blonde and blue-eyed.
There you go. Put that deuce-deuce on, man. Deuce-deuce on the loose. So with that being said, Monica Price, you know, Fisk University national champion all around in women's gymnastics. Awesome.
Wonderful
accomplishment. And we know Fisk is the majority school that houses the most dentists and doctors. Black doctors and black dentists, a great majority come out of Fisk University. So a lot of the people who go to Fisk are going there to get into the medical field and represent our people, and they do a really good job there. But at the same time, you know, they also, this small university, they're filled with a national champion in gymnastics. Okay, so that's just all I got to say about that. Monica Price is her name, 2024 all-around gymnastics champion, Fisk University.
Awesome. Enough said. In other words, sister girls, bang. Gary, come on with it.
For the first time in 45 years, the NHL and the NBA would start their playoffs the same week. That never happened before.
My main man Phil Handy's one of their assistant coaches, right?
Yes.
You know, Phil. That's my man there. You know, and
they did
a
nice job.
Gentlemen, I appreciate the fact that you indulged me getting this off my chest, because BASN has been in existence for 25 years now. For 25 years, we've heard this bullshit about white athletes and white non-athletes trying to dictate black futures. They either write poison about them or they do dirt to them with the dick dastardly actions of referees, coaches who have personality conflicts, and writers who have axes to grind.
And
his
dog Smutley, Mike.
Yes, indeed. I'm up to here with it. And I was glad to finally get some of it out. Let's understand that it is important we tell our own stories. It is also important that those who do the work get the credit, and those who are considered bogus, counterfeit, or otherwise scumbags receive the full extent of the law.
And Mike,
if it please the motherfucking court, I try to see such a business with full degree, first degree felony, and homie. I'm tired of the race, I'm tired of racism, I'm tired of the white supremacy, I'm tired of the bullshit. And kudos to the black athletes, male and female, for holding up, standing up, and making sure that they are accounted for in thought, deed, and in practice on the field as well as off. Everybody have a good night. Don't eat too much. My birthday's coming up, so I'm going to have fun. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to y'all later. Stay safe and be safe.